And so we're back with Dr. Mindy Fullilove, and we are also joined by Cassette Reagan now and Robert Fox of Youth Organizers United. And
but before we start, we do want to let you know that we're going to be taking calls towards the end of the show. If you have any questions for our guests, you've been listening to them talk about the work that they're doing. If you have any questions, you can call 212-209-2900. We're going to be taking calls towards the end. I'll give another shout out for the calls and the number again, but just in case you want to write it down and tune and listen in and think of some questions or some comments, it's 212-209-2900.
And so, Saki, didn't you say you were kind of, we were talking during the break and you were saying you wanted to kind of get this discussion back in a kind of youth-oriented focus, right?
Yeah, according to the United Nations Population Fund report, you know, half of the estimated 5 million new HIV infections worldwide each year occur among people ages 15 to 24. Mm-hmm. And when you think about that age range, that's a very young group of people who are being infected on a daily basis by the HIV virus. We're going to talk with Cassette a little bit later about what the work that they're doing in terms of getting information to young people and preventative means. But I wanted to ask Dr. Fullilove, in terms of your work, what are you seeing amongst the young populations and the communities of color?
I think that the key issue is that communities of color going through this repeated upheavals. One of the things that falls apart is the educational system.
Mm.
And so young people are coming of age in terrible schools, and the schools are failing to really give them the kind of fundamental education that they're going to need for the kind of society that we live in. Mm-hmm. And we live in a society that's full of computers and technology, and a lot of kids are coming out of school barely able to read and write. This is a terrible, terrible policy. And so part of the whole, like, survival of the youth, of which AIDS is one small piece, mm-hmm. very important piece, but one small piece, the survival of youth, all these youth, is at stake because the fundamental things they need, learning, they're not getting. And so I think that when we talk about AIDS and we talk about youth, we need to put this in the context of how are we going to be sure that our young people survive. How are we going to get them the education, not just sex education, but every bit of education about computers, about technology, about reading, about writing, that they are going to need in the years to come?
I think that that's an important part that you mentioned, because we're, you know, planning on talking about the lack of sex education within the schools, but it seems to sound like you're saying that it's not only this lack of sex education that's creating misinformed students who then go out and have unprotected sex, but it's even a larger issue than that.
It is a larger issue because it's not like the kids are stupid. They see perfectly well what you can get a job doing, and they see perfectly well what kind of education they're getting.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know that nobody expects you to succeed, well, what are you going to do with your time? And so some of this is about feeling that the society is actually investing in you, that we care, that we want you to be alive.
Mm-hmm.
Because the kids are going to live or die because they think we want them to live or die.
What do you all, you know, Robert Fox and Cassette Reagan both are working with Youth Organizers United. It's a youth-led organization that promotes sexual health awareness. They're leading the charge to encourage these schools, public high schools in New York City, to teach students about AIDS and HIV, because apparently they're not. What's your comment in response to what the doctor was saying?
Well, I feel that...
That's Cassette Reagan.
I feel that the reason why it's like this is because no one wants to talk about it. It's like America's best kept secret. It's like people are dying, but they're trying to pretend like no one's dying. You know, youth, they go home, they speak with their parents and everything. It's like they don't want to talk about HIV and AIDS. They don't want to talk about sex. So the reason why I think it's so, like, large like this, no one wants to talk about it. They're trying to pretend like it'll go away if they ignore it.
Mm. And I mean, I think at the same time, if you want to relate kind of what you're saying and what we're hearing from Dr. Fullilove, is that people aren't talking about these systemic issues either. People aren't talking about necessarily the lack of education within our poor communities because of the school system itself. So I think that's interesting. But what exactly is the Youth Organizers United doing?
And maybe we could even jump back a step further, uh-huh. and you could tell us a little about what your organization is, what your mission is.
Well, our mission, well, Youth Organized United is a youth-run, youth-led organization that educates youth, well, people in general, about the effects of HIV and AIDS, you know, and I think Robert Fox could elaborate more on that, though.
Yeah, not only, like, do we educate and do, like, peer education and go out into the schools and go out on the streets, but we also do a lot of advocacy work around health policies and issues like that that New York City youth face. We also do a lot of education for adults as far as, like, when it comes to talking to youth and not talking down to us and things like that, and also just trying to make sure that the information that they give us is just, like, youth-friendly and things like that. That's basically, like, what we do at Youth Organized United.
And maybe you could talk a little bit about, there's this two-part campaign that we were discussing earlier, and you told me that since 1987, New York City has mandated that public high schools offer all students 6 lessons on AIDS and HIV. Is that right?
Yeah, 6 mandated lessons on HIV and AIDS.
Well, why don't you tell me a little about the work that Youth Organizers United has been doing to encourage schools to actually put this into practice?
Well, all of this came about in, like, I would say 2000, maybe like February of 2000. A lot of us had just found out about the mandates. I had just graduated from high school in June of 99, and I never received any of the lessons. I went to August Martin High School in Queens, which was kind of like a very good school because it was hard even for me to get in at first. They wouldn't even accept me because of where I was coming from. I was coming from Harlem, so they was like, nah, we can't have you in here. You got to go to a zone school. This is like a specialized school or whatever. But when they see my grades, they was like, ah, yeah, you could come here, and things like that. So, like, once a lot of us found out about these lessons and that they existed since 1987 and that they was re-expanded again in 91 to include things like condom availability, and none of us really knew about it, we decided to do, like, a survey, a street survey, to find out, like, if other high school students knew about it or if they didn't know about it just like us, or if they was receiving it just like us, or if they weren't receiving it. So that's how, like, I would say the two campaigns came about. Then after we did, like, the survey, we did a report on it. And then after that, we decided to go a little bit further. And the first step was to do a Hit the Schools campaign.
And the reason for hitting the schools is because what did you find out in during the survey process?
Well, during the survey process, we found out that not only didn't students not receive the lessons, but they didn't know about them either.
They didn't even know that they were supposed to be. Mm-mm. The schools were required to be providing these lessons.
And you visited 10 schools. How did you choose which schools you were going to target?
Well, a lot of us, like, we went to, like, some of the schools in the area. Like, sometimes we picked schools in Queens because, you know, a couple of organizers went to schools in Queens or Brooklyn and so on and so on. But we also went to places like no one even been before. We went to Staten Island. I mean, that's like another continent, you know. People don't really go there, you know. And we went to a couple, like, 3 schools in Staten Island, you know. And we would get on that ferry every day, and it was stressful, but we was committed, you know. And it was amazing because we found that a lot of youth out there wasn't receiving their 6 mandated lessons, the 6 each year. And they would, like, say, oh, that's health class, right? Oh, that's when you go to gym. And we're like, no, it's different. It's like it's supposed to set it aside. And usually they is a spark team or something like that in the school, and they put them up to teach and all that, but they don't delve into it as much as they're supposed to.
And I have your report that you released after the survey research. Mm-hmm. And so there are some other things that students are supposed to have as well. They're supposed to have a resource room.
Mm.
Is that right?
Yes.
They're supposed to have a lot of supplies and stuff, really.
They're supposed to have a resource room. They're supposed to have HIV/AIDS team and team leader. A lot of schools don't have that. A lot of schools don't have the resource room. A lot of schools, it's just crazy because a lot of the students that we had surveyed and when we was getting them to sign these petitions, they were really for learning about, like, all the ways to prevent HIV and AIDS, and they were just like, wow, this is something that our school needs, and we're glad that y'all out here trying to help us with this. So if you really look at it, like, the students were very, like, supportive and understood and were really like, yeah, let's do this.
But it sounds like you got stuck at that point, right? Students wanted the services.
Right.
But then, and you discovered the services weren't being provided, but then not that much happened, right?
Right. We had, after we had finished the 10 schools, we got about 3,000 signatures from students. And then we tried to meet with, like, some of the principals, not to give them a failing grade, but just to make sure that the lessons would be implemented the next upcoming year, just to make sure the students were getting the information that they wanted, just to find out ways that we could be, like, coming to the schools and help them as far as, like, if they didn't have teachers who felt comfortable talking about the issue with them, then we would come in and talk about it with them because, you know, this is what we do. This is what we feel comfortable doing. And by first and no means, I don't want nobody to think that we're out here promoting sex amongst young people. We're just not naive to the fact that young people are having sex mm-hmm. because we're young ourselves. So we definitely know, like, young people are having sex.
And so what's the response by the school administration?
They were just like, I guess, like, they just brushed it off because we were young people. And they was like, well, who are these young people to come up here and tell us that we're not doing our jobs? And how they going to tell us how to do our jobs better and things like that? That's how, like, a lot of us took it. So then we started phase two of Hit the Schools, which is Hit the Streets.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And describe a little bit the phase two, Hit the Streets. What exactly is that?
Well, Hit the Streets is, like, basically we go back in the same areas, like we, like where the school's in, and we go to, like, neighborhood businesses and everything and ask if they want to, like, join our postcard campaign, like join in the fight of HIV AIDS, like get the programs in school for the youth so they can learn more about the disease, you know?
What's the postcard?
Well,
the postcard, like, I have an example of it, I'll show you. The postcard is basically, like, just telling them about, like, the six mandated lessons, like how long they've been around, and just saying, like, the students haven't been receiving them, and just asking them if they're in favor of students learning all the ways to protect themselves against, like, HIV and AIDS. Mm-hmm. And so we ask them for their support, and the reason why we ask the adults for their support is that we think that, you know, when we go back to the schools this time, they'll take it more serious and not say, well, oh yeah, you only have a bunch of students that signed it. Well, now we have students and adults mm-hmm. who are registered voters that signed it. So, yeah, like, pay attention to us.
So who are the postcards being sent to? They're being sent to the schools, or they're being sent to the New York City State Administration? Who is it?
Well, actually, right now, a lot of us, we were talking about it, and since we didn't really get a good response from the principals, mm-hmm. like, now we're trying to meet with, like, city council members and bring it to their attention and let them know, like, what's happening. Like, we've been meeting with, like, city council members since, like, last year and just started letting them know about the issues and things like that due to the task force that we're on as well, the New York AIDS Coalition Task Force, at Public School Task Force.
And are there any city council members that have been particularly helpful, or anyone that you want us to lobby, like, yeah, suggestions on that end, anything like that?
Well, the ones that we talk to, they seem like they really care about the issue, and they be telling us, like, yeah, you know, well, we're in support of this, and telling us a lot of things. And
they
just tell us stuff. Like, we don't believe it until it's actually, like, being implemented, like, That's just how we are now. Because adults tell us a lot of things every day in our lives. But, you know what I mean? When it comes through the follow-through, that's when we really, like, believe them.
I feel it's like we're young. So it's like every time we approach adults and everything, they always going to take us, like, they're not going to take us seriously. They're just going to go like, A lot of times, like, okay. And they brush it off. So they don't take us seriously. And I think that's why the AIDS epidemic is so big, because they don't listen to the youth and they don't talk to the youth. You know, and this blows up in your face.
And that was Cassette Reagan from Youth Organizers United, and it's 11:41, almost 11:42, and you're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM. And so we're here with Cassette Reagan, Robert Fox, and Dr. Mindy Fullalove is still with us. And Mindy, I was wondering if you had any thoughts for Cassette and Robert.
Yeah, I actually wanted to also, I was curious to know what your response is in terms of the research that you're doing with the lack of education that's supposed to be happening on the specific topic of AIDS. And it just kind of seems to me like there's some contradictions. Like, if we're saying that this is something that we want to be addressing, and then the fundamental a fundamental piece of addressing it is, you know, this education, and that's what's missing. How does that play into the systemic structural problems within communities of color?
I liked what you were saying about adults don't listen but to kids, but it's not just that adults don't listen to kids. It's that people with power don't listen to people without power.
Mm. Mm.
So I'm older, but that doesn't mean they listen to me. My dad always used to love to tell this joke about, and my dad was a union organizer, and he always used to love to tell this joke about this lion who thought he was the king of the jungle. And so he was going up to all the animals like the monkey, and he would roar at them and say, "Who's the king of the jungle?" And the monkey would say, "You are, Mr. Lion, you are." So he went to all these animals, and they all said, "You're the king of the jungle." And finally he got to the elephant, and he roared at the elephant, and he said, "Who's the king of the jungle?" And the elephant picked him up with his trunk and threw him against the tree. And the lion said, "Well, you didn't have to get so mad just because you didn't know." So your point about getting the cards, getting organized, that's the key. And probably the most terrible thing about the destruction of neighborhoods for whoever was neighborhood was destroyed, whether it was Native Americans, Japanese Americans, African Americans, whoever neighborhood it was destroyed, is that you break the organization of the neighborhoods. And so what you're doing in terms of organizing people is fundamental. And don't stop with AIDS education. Once you get enough power that they have to listen to you, then every other kind of education and jobs and things like that, that's the next thing on the agenda. But it's not just because you're kids.
Hmm.
I'm in the same boat.
We're gonna take some phone calls for our guest. The number is 212-209-2900. If you have a question or a comment, please give us a call. We're speaking with three amazing people doing amazing work, two young people with Youth Organizers United, and also Dr. Mindy Thompson Fully Love about her work on the AIDS epidemic in Black America. 212-209-2900.
And do we have a caller? No caller.
Give them a chance, Leanne. 212-209-2900. Is there anything? I mean, just what struck me with having spoken with you first and talking about, you know, a group of people who are in power and versus people who are out of power, and then listening to them, it seems like it's, you know, I don't know if I want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but it seems like there is a reason why these six lessons on HIV and AIDS that are supposed to be mandated since 1987 aren't being done in these schools. And I'm just curious to know if you feel like that's another part of, or another leg of, this kind of displacement and this kind of other structural issues that are lacking within communities of color, that then, as you're saying, it sounds like leads to the increase of the AIDS epidemic.
Well, the way I would look at it is that if you think about all the things that aren't working in New York City schools for kids,
mm-hmm.
because English isn't working, they mandate that. Social studies isn't working, they mandate that. So it's not a serious commitment to poor kids and kids of color that are in these schools. Would you disagree with that?
No.
I mean, we don't get a lot of things, man. We used to disappointment.
So what I'm trying to say is, and I think you would agree, that the sixth lesson in AIDS are part of a pattern of not giving you what you need to really come out of the schools well-educated in every area of survival.
Right.
But
right.
It's like, I mean, the reason why it's like, I mean, I grew up in a poor community too. I'm from Crown Heights, and I went to Prospect Heights High School. And what it was there was like, they didn't even have toilet paper in the boys' bathroom. We didn't have certain things, you know. So it's like when the schools would get money in for certain funding, they would take it and put it towards something else, like books or something like that. Or you have to fill out lunch forms. There'd be times you couldn't come in school if you didn't fill out a lunch form, because they give the schools money for like all the kids to sign for lunch. And I'm like, I don't eat school lunch. Well, you can't come in. You got to fill out the lunch form. And they would take that and they'll put it to other programs. And so it got to the point where I would see a lot of my friends dropping out, or just not even going to school, or just chilling in the second floor hallway, because they saw in their mind as is, okay, if I work or don't work, don't mean nothing. I come to school, the teachers don't care, you know, so if I drop out, okay, I can make more money on the street and learn more on the street than I can do here. But then they got something out there called Rockefeller drug laws, and you get locked up, and then you go to prison, and then they got modern day slavery. So it's like, what am I living for? You know what I mean? And some people in their mind, they don't want to have that same boring old life. Like, okay, you grow up, you go through 12 years of schooling. Okay, then you go to college, go get an extra 4 more. And then you spend your life behind a job that, behind a desk of a job you don't like, spending the rest of your life paying off loans to raise kids to go through the same thing. That's boring. They say, well, don't go through that. You know, and that's what they're looking at it. And it's like, it's crazy.
So it sounds to me like a part of your work, Dr. Philolove, is also actually exposing this process and how this process is actually leaving our communities open and susceptible to disease such as AIDS and HIV. Is that?
Yeah, because if you think about it, a job, say you were a bank teller, is pretty boring, but you don't go to jail, you don't get AIDS. And so to some extent, you know, the kids get sold a bill of goods. Like, you get a job, you'll be bored. Whereas you get a job, you can create your life, right? You get education, you can create your life. You go to college, you learn things. You can invent who you want to be. So by telling kids it's just boring, drop out, it's more exciting on the streets, by kids believing that, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're creating disaster for themselves and for everybody around them. So part of what we all have to do is say, you know, forget about being boring. Life is a little bit boring, but it's also the more education you have, the more likely you are to be able to invent excitement that's going to be safe for your health and safe for your family and be able to take care of your kids, stuff like that.
But a lot of times you feel like it's like they're in it by themselves, you know?
So how do we
no
change
one's
that?
Helping them. I mean, we got to show involvement that we care. I mean, because it's like the teachers, I mean, I had a couple of teachers in my life who I've seen who really care, you know, mold me to the person I am today, but some teachers don't care. They just coming through to get their paycheck. I mean, they see a fight in the hallway. They, okay, that's not my business. That's my student, but I'm not breaking it up. He should be in my class right now. You know what I mean? They don't care. Yeah.
I was thinking that, you know, we always say, well, the teachers aren't very good. But as I remember when I was going to school, I had a lot of horrible teachers. I mean, most of them were horrible.
The students are horrible, too.
Yeah. But the one thing that I always had was so many people, like my neighbors, my parents, everybody was like, I don't care if your teachers are horrible, you got to learn. You don't have any choice about it.
Yeah.
And I think that if we think about that, in our community, say we're in a poor community, because I was growing up in a poor community, you can control what you think about education. We can control that. We can say, we don't care what the teachers are. You go there and learn anyway. We're going to help each other learn. Think about what slaves had to do to learn. Mm-hmm. They didn't have any teachers. They had to teach each other. We have to teach ourselves. We have to create an insistence on learning. The youth, we can't let the youth be misled by the fact that the teachers are boring, the schools don't have toilet paper. We have to say, well, they're trying to convince you that learning isn't important, but that's a lie. Learning is the fundamental survival tool in this society.
I wouldn't only say that. It's just like, you know, look at the role models they give us to look up to. Look at the things that they really want us to chase. Look at the things that, you know, they have us value.
What condition that's, before we come to school?
That's where the real problems start. Like, if they're not giving us nothing positive and they're not really showing us anything different, like I said, when I was first in high school, like as a younger like child coming up or whatever, I wasn't like the nice guy. I was to really tell you the truth,
bully.
I was really on the streets. I used to do street things. I used to be into the street life. And the reason for that was just because of everything that was around me. I didn't see anything different.
And so how did you get involved with Youth Organizers United?
Believe it or not, like the way I got involved was through another program called the AIDS and Adolescents Network of New York. And our executive director, who was a program coordinator for the AIDS and Adolescents Network of New York, he seen me in like a health fit, and I was just there and I was cutting. And basically, like, the reason why I was cutting was I was in there, I was gambling, and I was talking to some of the younger ladies, and I was in there stealing condoms from the booths and things like that.
Right.
And he seen me in there the whole day, and, like, towards the end when I was leaving, like, he had called my name. Like, he was like, Red. So I turned around, and, you know, I'm thinking, like, I might have to punch somebody in the face or something. And it turns out to find out that, you know, he really started to talk to me and find out, like, you know, why was I doing the things that I was doing? And nobody never really asked me these type of questions. And then he asked me if I would be, like, interested in doing some of the things that he's doing now.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, yeah, you know, whatever. And he took my number. And he was like, yo, I'm going to call you. I was like, yeah, right. You ain't going to call me. I ain't getting no job. Ain't nobody giving me no job. So when he had called me, like, the following year, I was surprised because, like, he kept checking up on me and things like that, making sure I was going to class, mm-hmm. and just trying to make sure that, you know, that I was really headed to graduate from high school instead of, like, dropping out like my brothers and some of my friends were doing.
And now you're doing the important work that you're doing. And I just wanted to, for anyone who's listening, and if you were trying to call, you know, our phone lines are down, so we aren't taking calls if
and
you're trying
not,
to call.
Not that you've abandoned us, so yeah. We feel better. So this freewheeling conversation we've been having amongst the guests, again, I want to just remind you, we're here with Cassette Reagan from Youth Organizers United, Robert Fox from Youth Organizers United, and Dr. Mindy Full of Love.
Yeah, and unfortunately, like, it would be great to sit here and actually hash out some things that I'm hearing in terms of, like, building the community and having alternatives and showing the youth that they're all alternatives.
But could go out
but
and read
it's 11:53.
Mindy's book instead.
And we'll have you guys
coming out in June. And it's called Root Shock. And... sorry, I got a little distracted by the music there. It's called Root Shock. And Mindy, what's the secondary title?
How Tearing Up City Neighborhoods Hurts America and What We Can Do About It.
So thanks again to our guests. And our engineer for today was Errol Maitland. And your hosts were me, Leanne, and Saki. And props to Slab and Kat and Deanna. A lot of people pitched in with the music this week. Run out and buy that new Dead Prez CD. And
also, I promised that we'd get you the information on the the Haiti on screen. You can call 212-998-4222 about more information. And the weekend's event is called Haiti on Screen, 212-998-4222.
Rise Up Radio, as always, is a production of the Free Radio Youth Collective. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We're out.
So you ignore, think you'll never be infected. When money can't buy you green trees, would you have help since now you can't breathe? You think material will save you? With this rise or the odds decides to wake you, could be your chance, leave confusion. Evaporate from the worlds of illusion.
And indeed, you're tuned to WBAI.